struggling a little bit with my voice, but not too bad. I'm glad to be talking to you, and I'm particularly glad to be talking to Daniel Pipes, who is one of the leading writers and experts on the Middle East. He has a fascinating and very important new piece about the surprising development of Muslims, and yes, Muslim Arabs, including Muslim Palestinians, making new homes in the state of Israel. And this at a point where obviously the prospects of war and what people call wider war are enormously serious. Daniel Pipes is been writing on the Middle East and some of the challenges for many, many years. First of all, Daniel, concerning the recent attacks, both the well-publicized pager attacks and the walkie-talkie attacks, and then the large strike yesterday that reportedly killed 500 people. Most of those people who perished were Hezbollah operatives, were they not?
Michael, I don't know. I don't believe what the Lebanese authorities report, what Hezbollah reports. I don't know how much the Israelis know, so I don't know.
And in terms of what Israel is attempting to do by this very dramatic intensification of the war against Hezbollah, what is the end game here?
Well, it's striking to note the contrast between Israel's war on Hamas and its war on Hezbollah. The war on Hamas, Prime Minister and Defense Minister and many others have repeatedly said, is intended to destroy the organization. Now, whether or not the Israelis can achieve that is another matter, but the goal is to destroy it, leave it moribund. In the case of Hezbollah, the goal is not to destroy it. The goal is to deter it, to compel it to pull back, to stop attacking Israel, not trying to end its existence, just trying to end the attacks on Israel. And this points to a larger distinction between the two, in that for Hezbollah, attacking Israel is a sideshow. Its main goal is to control Lebanon. It's something it can do or not do. Whereas for Hamas, attacking Israel is essential. That's its mission, ending the existence of the Jewish state. So these are really quite different wars from Israel's point of view.
And in terms of the ongoing war in Gaza against Hamas, has that been put aside, forgotten, or is that, what is the situation there?
It appears that the Israelis have put it somewhat on hold, not completely, but the main focus of the political and military leadership is now Lebanon. They're trying, in other words, what happened is that the attempt to reach a ceasefire agreement with Hamas is now pretty much defunct. Hamas played the game for months and months and finally showed its hand that it's not willing to make the kind of concessions that Israel needs to reach an agreement. And therefore, with that agreement no longer possible, the prospect of Hezbollah pulling out, I guess a little complicated, in other words, Hezbollah is in this to support Hamas. The hope was to close the conflict with Hamas, and therefore Hezbollah would go away. The conflict with Hamas is not closing down, and therefore Hezbollah is not going away, and therefore the Israelis have to deal with Hezbollah separately.
Do you think that it was a solid decision to use these unconventional means of warfare that Israel has employed that had a devastating impact on southern Lebanon?
By unconventional, you're referring to the pagers and walkie-talkies or to
yes.
the bombing?
Yeah. Well, the bombing was conventional.
Yeah. I was brilliant. It appears this was a very long-term undertaking and extraordinary, and it appears to have a really big impact on Hezbollah. So we'll know more in the future, but it does look very effective. And there have been reports that far more Hezbollah operatives were killed than are being admitted. We'll see. All this will come out in the wash, but at present, it looks like a very effective and rather clean way, in the sense that it killed few non-Hezbollah operatives. The UN and others are outraged, but it looks like a very, very challenging and clever and successful method, and obviously completely original.
Daniel Pipes is president of the Middle East Forum. He's also a senior fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies. And you have this new two-part study about Muslim Aliyah. And for people who don't know, Aliyah is the term that is given to immigrants to Israel, who Aliyah means going up. And that basically the whole Israeli society has been built on literally hundreds of thousands of people who, Jewish people, who came to Israel and helped to build the country. Now you're writing about Muslim Aliyah, which occurred both before Israel's independence and afterward. The numbers here are astonishing. Why is it important that people recognize what's going on?
It's important for two different reasons. The pre-Israel immigration of Muslims to Palestine points to the fact that the people now called Palestinians are pretty much as much immigrants as the Jews, who are Israelis. These are two populations that are immigrant populations. The number of indigenous people going back, say, pre-1800, pre-200 years ago, is small. Most of the peoples there, whether Jewish or Muslim, came in the past two centuries. The second important part is that since Israel came into existence three quarters of a century ago, Israel has been a beacon for Muslims to move to. And this is ever more so as Israel has become an economic success story. You find Muslims from far and wide, from Africa, from many, many parts of Africa, from the Middle East, from South Asia, wanting to go to Israel to work, to live, sometimes to become Jewish, to become Israeli citizens. It's a remarkable testimony to the attractiveness of Israel as an immigration destination.
And it's still about 20% of the overall Israeli population identifies as Muslim.
Correct.
Yeah, and you have this unbelievable passage from an immigrant to Israel named Yusuf Samir, and he says, "When I saw the Israeli soldiers, I nearly fainted from happiness. I fell on the floor and kissed the earth because before their feet. It was as if I was born all over again. I saw a country that cared about its citizens, something that would not happen to such an extent even in Western cultures like the United States." And Yusuf Samir is a Muslim Arab.
An Egyptian who fled once from Gamal Abdel Nasser's Egypt some 55 years ago. And then he was captured by the PA, the Palestinian Authority, some 20 years ago. When the quote you read was when he got to Israel the second time as a place of refuge. So I think he's unique. He's certainly the only one I know, the only Muslim Arab who twice took refuge in Israel.
It's all fascinating. We're going to link your piece on Muslim Aliyah up at our website at michaelmedved.com. The book by Daniel Pipes is also listed there, coming up on the Michael Medved Show.
From politics to pop culture.
Most recent book by Daniel Pipes, our guest, from the Middle East Institute. His most recent book is called Israel Victory, How Zionists Win Acceptance and Palestinians Get Liberated. That appeared in June of 2024. And Daniel, you were just at a conference on anti-Semitism at Harvard, which has had its share of anti-Semitic extremism, certainly in the last academic year. What came, if anything, out of this high-level meeting in which you participated?
Well, it was an unprecedented event. in the last year, an organization of Jewish alumni became just turned up. And this is its first significant event. It had some 1,000 people. It was in the largest hall, Sanders Theater at Harvard. It had the main event was a 3-hour long series of talks. What struck me was two things. First, the fact that it occurred in itself was a major statement, a major pushback against the university, which has been so lax in its concern about Jews at the university in contrast to any other minority. And second, the focus was not on research, was not on teaching. It was on the student experience. It was on the harassment and discrimination and other problems that the students were experiencing. So it was a tactile thing. It wasn't an abstract thing. It wasn't about what some course might be teaching. The courses came up only in the sense that a student might not be welcome in a course, or the instructor might be biased against the student, but it was really about students. It was an alumni concern for today's students.
Does it sound like there is more sensitivity to this issue than the previous administration at Harvard?
Well, the interim president turned up at a pre-event reception, somewhat briefly, Alan Gerber, on the one hand. On the other hand, he wasn't there for the main event. Most of the speakers, nearly all the speakers, were very gentle. So it was something like saying, you know, the king is great, but his advisors are a problem. It was he himself and the leadership were not criticized. It was more, hey, you need to pay attention. You know, this is an issue. There was just one student who came out and named the interim president and a couple of others as being problems, as not solving the problem. But being problems themselves. So with the exception of that one student, it was constructive. It was saying, hey, Harvard, pay attention. There is a problem. You haven't really noticed it. You haven't paid attention to it. You're not giving it the kind of a concern that you would give to any other minority group. Please pay attention. So it was polite. It was constructive. But I think implicit was, okay, you know, if we don't get satisfaction, we'll ratchet it up.
There is an article, an op-ed today in the Wall Street Journal by Paul Clement and Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, under the headline, Congress Can Protect Jews on Campus. I don't know if you've seen the argument. It's a bill that would clarify the Civil Rights Act's ban against anti-Semitism and toughen penalties. Do you think this is serious enough to require congressional action?
I hate to say yes, but I guess I have to say yes. You know, it is systemic, it is widespread, and there are few signs that it's improving. Now, with the new academic year just beginning in the last few weeks, there are signs that, that the universities are taking a tougher line towards the takeover of public spaces and the discrimination against Jews, but it seems modest in its application. And if not the passage of a federal law, the threat of such a passage, I think is a good thing. I would hope it's not necessary, but I think it's a good thing to put the universities and colleges on notice that what is going on is seen and is of concern to not just the Jewish population, but the national government.
And another question, which is a very sensitive one, is that the political situation in Israel. I have read that apparently in polling, and they are just as obsessed with polling in Israel as we are here in the United States, the polling has shown that in the last several weeks, Prime Minister Netanyahu has had an improvement in his standing with the electorate. Do you think there will be some new elections soon and some change in direction? What is your anticipation?
The Prime Minister is treading a very fine line between the opposition and the foreign governments on the one side and his coalition partners on the other side. He has so far done it for almost a year, since October 7th. It could crash at any moment, but he's a very skilled operator.
They call him the magician.
Yeah, he's the longest-serving prime minister of Israel. So I'd be inclined not to bet against him. I think he could. He's likely to keep at it. Though at the same time, I approve of his policies. I think he's doing a good job. But I think he has been around so long, and he has so many opponents and enemies, that I don't think he's the best messenger or the most credible leader for Israel at this time. I wish he would hand over power to one of his allies.
Mm-hmm. Naftali Bennett is a name that comes to mind.
That would certainly be one, or someone within the Likud party. Either an ally in another party or an ally in the party, I think that would be a very important step forward for Israel right now.
Daniel Pipes, he is the author of the recent book Israel Victory, How Zionists Win Acceptance and Palestinians Get Liberated. He has also written a really wonderful and touching and inspiring piece about Muslim Aliyah, which paralleled the Jewish Aliyah. This second part of that research is part two that covers the period since 1948 and the establishment of the State of Israel. Daniel, wishing you Lashana Tova, a very wonderful new year, and may it be a new year of peace and blessing and constructive developments. We are going to be joined coming up by Tom Nichols, who has taught for many, many years at the Naval School, and 25 years he has, and has actually been an advisor on foreign policy and more to the Defense Department and to leading sources in our politics. And we'll also be speaking to a Washington Post writer who, Ashley Parker is her name. She just wrote a piece, which is very amusing, actually, about the imaginary and frightening world of Donald Trump. And it's because it is imaginary, it actually is less frightening than you would expect. And then Linda Chavez, who has been a Republican nominee for U.S. Senate from Maryland, was a major aide in the Reagan administration, and about the whole issue of mass deportation, which is, in these last days of the campaign, seems to be the biggest focus of the Trump campaign. Is actually getting these people out, send them back, as his crowd was cheering in Indiana, Pennsylvania, and which is a town. It's not a section of the state of Pennsylvania. The fascinating thing is that it's no longer build the wall, because obviously building a wall doesn't achieve what President Trump seems to want, which is a mass removal of millions of people, some of whom have been living here for a very long time. We will get to that and to much more coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.
Ding, 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 ding.
Get 50% off by becoming an annual MedHead member.
Nice.
Join at michaelmedved.com.
Real nice.
Ding, 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 ding.